Today's theme, we're talking about the race. And now I can run this race with joy. Jesus told us this parable about the Pharisee and the tax collector. And when I had a bit of a lucid moment, it occurred to me, there's a Pharisee in my family. Can you give me the next slide, please? King Arthur, our newest recruit, has turned out to be a little sus. He's a permanent resident with us now, after we realised that we just got too invested and a little bit too attached to him, so we couldn't let him go. We're still working through his health issues, but he's a much improved and happier dog than when we met this poor, scrawny, needy and shut down animal. We are adjusting. But we were at the dog park recently, and Arthur, still being trained, was not responding to our calls and ignoring our pleas as he barked and chased every scooter, pram, dog, person walking, you name it, whatever went down that path. Will you play with me? Will you pat me? Will you feed me? Will you come? Please, I will play with you and run with you and love you and you can take me home and play. This was Arthur's brain, not mine. See, at that point I realised Arthur is like the Pharisee. He was so full of his own thoughts that he crowded out the most important ones. He wasn't listening to the most important voice, and therefore his behaviour was not acceptable. Jesus was telling the important ones, those full of their own self-importance, directly. Like he was really giving it to them. They are wrong in their approach to God in prayer. See, I can almost visualise God looking at the man as he was saying, "Hey God, you are so lucky to have me. I fast all the time. I give some money that I can easily afford. I obey all the rules that we made up ourselves." And I think God would go. But then he looks at the tax collector, who is visibly remorseful. He hangs his head and he beats his chest and prays with passion, leaving nothing out and pleading for God's forgiveness. Now I can visualize God when he hears the man praying and saying, "Yes, I can work with this guy. His heart and mind are open. He will willingly accept my direction over his own. I love this." The Pharisee was just telling God how good he was and locked in his own thoughts, just like that guy. We're working on him. I'll just say that the Pharisee in this parable is not portrayed to be bitter about the tax collector. He's just thankful not to be like him. Perhaps the most significant thing we can tell about the Pharisee's prayer, is that it's just nothing like the one that Jesus teaches his disciples to pray. That prayer is entirely God-centric, opening with God's name, kingdom, and will, and then moving to our need of him for daily bread, forgiveness, and deliverance. The prayer, he said, is the prayer of one who has no need of, well, the Pharisee's prayer, it's the one that has no need of anything or anyone, because he's already in himself perfect, especially with respect to the wretched tax collector. And Jesus was telling these self-important people this parable to their faces to show them just who they are in the big scheme of things. The tax collector exhibits precisely what Jesus spoke about in the Sermon on the Mount. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Being poor in spirit means admitting we have nothing to offer to God to make up for our sin. We come to God as empty, impoverished, bankrupt, desperate beggars. The tax collector recognises his spiritual poverty and seeks the only thing that can fix the gap between himself and God. Have mercy on me. And we know from the end of the parable, God heard his prayer for mercy and granted it. The tax collector went away justified because he'd humbled himself before God, confessing that no amount of works from him could save him, and only God's mercy could. The takeaway lesson from that is that God does not accept the prayer of the person who exalts themselves. Instead, the one who humbles themselves, recognizing their need for mercy, is the one God listens to. In 2 Timothy, it covers some of his reflections as he nears the end of his life. We've already said this is a far more personal and final letter, as Paul knows he will be executed soon. No way out this time. This man, who so persecuted the church, even being holding the coats while they martyred Stephen, Jesus saved him in spectacular fashion and made him an apostle and covered so much area, was shipwrecked multiple times, was persecuted and imprisoned. He did so much to spread the gospel over 30 odd years and now realizes time's up. I can only have small imaginings of what he might have felt like. See, sometimes when we have experienced some of the major milestones in our lives, there's that feeling that something substantial has finished and that life will never be the same. Last day of school, that day when you retire, maybe when the kids leave home, selling the family home, there's more, but they don't compare. I don't think so. It's just that feeling of finality. All over, done. Nothing more to do. And as he acknowledges that his time is almost up, he described himself as being poured out like a drink offering. Like our tax collector's prayer. Paul is reflective and says he has fought the good fight. He's finished the race. And he's kept the faith. He can only look forward now to the crown of righteousness, to what's awaiting for him on the other side. And this moment will come to every single one of us. We'll all at some stage be looking for what comes next. Paul felt that he'd been abandoned by many of the companions he had been sharing time with. But the Lord stood by him and gave him strength. Hopefully, when we're in Paul's position, we can say, I've fought the good fight. I've run the race. And when we do so, we'll know we're not alone, like Paul did, and that Jesus will be with us in support.